You're listening to On Subrogation, the litigation podcast about how to recover your damages from the people who caused them. We are your hosts. I'm Rebecca Wright.
And I'm Steve Alsop, and we are both experienced civil litigators and partners at Rathbone Group.
If you have questions or comments during our podcast, please email us at podcast@rathbonegroup.com.
Or you can visit us at our website, rathbonegroup.com.
So, Steve, have you ever been involved in a car accident?
Oh, yes. I've been in several.
All right. Well, remind me not to drive with you. And also, well, why don't you pick one? Whose fault was it?
I've been at fault in one accident, and then I was not at fault in two accidents.
All right. Well, let's talk about the one where you were at fault. What happened there?
I was a new driver. I think I was about 16 or 17 at the time, and I was pulling into a friend's driveway, and it was pouring the rain. I mean, it was sheets of rain coming down, and I couldn't see. And I misjudged the clearance between his car, which was parked, and my car, which I was turning right into the driveway. And my door hit the bumper. I was at fault because I was negligent, and it's because I couldn't see. And since I couldn't see, I shouldn't have been moving. If you can't see, you shouldn't go.
Well, and that's really the basis for most of the American legal system is fairness. So whoever's at fault should be responsible for the damages. And when you get down to the core of it, that's the purpose of subrogation as well. Whoever was at fault should be responsible.
And the magic word there to determine who is at fault is negligence in most circumstances, unless it's an intentional thing. Of course, I didn't hit his car on purpose, but in this, this case, I was negligent and it was my fault.
So let's talk about negligence, because I know this is a term that is taught to law students and things, but I think the general public has less of an understanding of the legal definition of negligence. There are four components, right?
Correct. So we remember from the bar exam duty, breach, causation, and damages. Those are your four elements. Negligence is defined by when a defendant owes a duty towards the plaintiff, otherwise has to take reasonable care for the safety of others. And there is a general duty to behave in such a way that doesn't cause other people injury. So you have a general duty just walking around or just driving around in this case.
Right. In your example of your accident, you had a responsibility when operating the vehicle to avoid causing damage to other people's property.
Correct. The second is that there's a breach. Otherwise, a defendant failed to act in a reasonable way and breached that duty.
So your 16-year-old self failed to drive slowly enough for the weather conditions, failed to maintain an assured clear distance or a proper lookout, and breached that duty to refrain from causing damage to other vehicles when you struck your friend's car.
Other examples of breaching your duty to avoid damaging others are just driving in a reckless way, speeding, driving while intoxicated. These are all breaches of your duty to take reasonable care for others' safety or their property. The third is that you are the cause of another's injuries. You have to be the actual cause and the proximate cause, and there is a distinction there. Basically, that you should have known that your breach would cause injuries, or it's foreseeable that the breach would cause the injuries to another person or their property.
Right, and your action in striking your friend's vehicle as a result of failing to maintain a proper lookout, failure to drive at an appropriate speed for the conditions, did directly cause your friend's damages to his vehicle.
Correct, and that is the fourth element. There actually have to be damages. If you have a duty towards others and you breach that duty and you cause any kind of, say, contact with them and there's no damages, you're technically not negligent because damages are a part of negligence. And in this instance, I did scratch his bumper.
Well, there you go. So your 16-year-old self was negligent. How dare you?
Correct.
But there are different kinds of negligence.
And that is the topic we are here to talk about today, the difference between contributory negligence and comparative negligence. This is a way for different jurisdictions in the United States to determine who is at fault, and it is varied among the different states.
And determining who is at fault is part of the process of a contributory negligence or comparative negligence determination, but the actual outcome of the determination really has less to do with who is at fault and more to do with who is going to be liable for the damages.
Correct.
So originally, there was only one type, and we're going way back here to the English common law system. And under the English common law system, which is the system on which 49 out of 50 states' laws are based, looking at you, Louisiana, but everyone else bases their system on the English common law system. And under that system, there was only contributory negligence. Under the doctrine of contributory negligence, any liability on the part of the injured party is a bar to recovery. So a party cannot be held liable, in this case, the defendant cannot be held liable if the injured person contributed to his own suffering and injury, even if only slightly. So even if the plaintiff is only 1% liable, there is no liability that is attributed to the defendant, or they're not responsible for those damages in a contributory negligence state. So let's go back to your car accident case. Mm-hmm. So you hit your friend's parked car.
Correct.
Now, what if your friend's parked car was 2 centimeters over the line into a no parking zone?
Correct. Or if it was, say, hanging out of the back of the driveway a little bit into the street and just parked illegally.
Right.
It could be argued that he's 1% at fault because his vehicle was parked incorrectly and causes a danger to others if it's in another lane or if it's out into traffic.
And so in a contributory negligence jurisdiction, your friend would not have been able to recover his damages from you, even though you arguably were 99% of the reason for the accident.
Oh, quite.
So this is a rather harsh result. And most states have gone away from a contributory negligence scheme, but there are still 4 states and the District of Columbia that accept this. And those are Alabama, Maryland, North Carolina, and Virginia, as well as DC, which are all still contributory negligence states. But as you can imagine, most states have determined that this rather harsh result seems unfair. So a lot of states have moved away from it. What those states have moved towards is comparative negligence. A comparative negligence model requires the court to apportion fault among the liable parties, even apportioning some fault to the plaintiff, and then reduces the amount of the defendant's fault and reduces the amount of the resulting damages that the defendant must pay by the amount of fault that's attributed to the injured party.
The easy way to remember this is that in contributory negligence states, you're barred if your plaintiff contributed to the injury, taken literally. And in comparative negligence, everyone has their fault apportioned and compared, and that's why it's called comparative negligence.
Of course, like anything else, there are different ways that this concept have been applied as well. So some states use what's called a pure comparative negligence system. In a pure comparative negligence system, no matter how at fault the plaintiff is or the injured party is, there is no bar to recovery. So you can still get a judgment against the defendant, even if the plaintiff is more at fault than the defendant is. So if your friend's vehicle was hanging halfway out into the street and you still hit it, arguably, you're probably at that point 30% negligent or so, because you probably should have been keeping a proper lookout. But the court would still be tasked in a pure comparative negligence jurisdiction with determining how at fault you were and how at fault your friend was. And then the court would reduce the amount of damages that you had to pay based on the amount of fault that's attributed to your friend.
Let's flip it around. Let's say he was just, you know, a few inches outside the driveway, as the back end of his vehicle is in the street 3 inches or so. And let's flip it around and say, I want to sue him for my damages. I'm still 99% at fault here because I'm driving a car that's in motion and I'm going in a direction I can't really see. But you can say he's 1% liable, therefore I can recover 1% of the damage to my car.
That's absolutely right. That's how it works.
That's how it works in pure comparative negligence. Now, of course, we know this as litigators. You're opening yourself up for some pain there because he's just going to file a countersuit for his 99%. And you will owe that if it's determined you were 99% at fault for damages. So what you're going to look for in cases like that is that your damages will outstrip theirs.
But it does make you understand why you may see more third-party complaints in a subrogation context in a pure comparative negligence jurisdiction.
Absolutely.
Versus a modified comparative negligence jurisdiction.
It's worth it because, you know, if you can prove that your plaintiff is 10% liable, you can at least recover or offset your damages that you'll have to pay out eventually by that 10%.
Right. And let's think about this economically. So if you are the defendant, or you're representing the defendant, and the plaintiff sues you for an accident that the plaintiff was 10% at fault for, and you don't file a counterclaim in that action, then in a pure comparative negligence jurisdiction, the court will apportion 90% of the fault to you, the defendant, and so you are going to have to pay 90% of the plaintiff's damages to him. End of story. If you counterclaim for your own damages, and let's say that somehow you had equal damages to the plaintiff in this matter, then yes, you are going to pay 90% of the damages to the plaintiff. So you're going to get that 10% apportionment in your favor on the plaintiff's damages. But then the plaintiff will also be required to pay you 10% of your own damages.
Correct.
So essentially at that point, if you have equal damages, you're getting a 20% apportionment as opposed to a 10% apportionment.
And one of the ways this really gums up litigation is when you have one party whose damages are astronomical, but they're actually more at fault.
Yes.
And then you have another party whose damages are low to moderate, and they had very little fault. Mm-hmm. And this has happened to me in several cases where you'll see a, you know, a smaller or an older car get in an accident. The damages are, say, $3,000 or $4,000. But the other party is a semi-truck. And any kind of damage that happens to a semi-truck, you know, starts at around $20,000 and can go up from there. It goes up to, you know, hundreds, depending on if the cargo is damaged as well. If your client or your plaintiff in that case is the car, you don't want them filing for their 10 or 20% because that 10 or 20% outstrips the whole worth of your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So in those cases, even though, you know, the semi-truck driver may be 80% at fault, it doesn't make sense to go through it with trial because you're going to wind up paying.
That's absolutely right. And we do see that all the time. And oftentimes you're not even getting an argument from the other side that they're, you know, 90% at fault. The argument that you're getting is this is 50-50, but my 50 is way bigger than your 50.
Yeah, my 50 is 50,000. Your 50 is 2,500.
Right. Are you sure you want to do this? And it's something you have to consider if you are in one of the 13 states that follow a pure comparative negligence system. And South Dakota is one of those 13 states, right?
South Dakota follows a slight or gross negligence rule. And in this system, the plaintiff's and the defendant's respective degrees of fault are only compared when the plaintiff's negligence is considered slight. So it doesn't really get into percentages. So there are certain ways that the court will determine whether or not the negligence is slight or if the negligence is considered gross. A plaintiff is barred from recovery if his or her fault is more than slight. That's how they determine it. And only South Dakota uses this slight and gross determination for comparative negligence.
So because it's not a percentage, sometimes South Dakota is called a pure comparative negligence system. Mm-hmm. But because gross negligence on the part of a plaintiff can actually bar the plaintiff's recovery, in that respect, it's really functioning more like a modified comparative negligence system. So and modified comparative negligence.
It is the most common approach. And the way it works is that a plaintiff won't recover if they're found to be either equally responsible or more responsible for the resulting injury.
Depending on the jurisdiction.
Yes.
Absolutely. And this is, I think this is the system that most people would say strikes them as the most fair.
Right.
That you shouldn't be able to sue somebody else for something that you were more at fault for.
Or equally at fault.
Right. This was everybody's fault.
Yeah. We were both acting negligently. We both got into an accident. And the easiest way I can illustrate two parties both being 50% negligent is if it were, let's say, a head-on left-of-center collision and both vehicles went left-of-center.
Mm-hmm.
So you can picture that. One vehicle drifts over left-of-center, the other vehicle's coming on, and they drift left-of-center as well, and they hit head-on. You can't really determine which of those two is more than 50% at fault. I would say they're both 50% at fault.
And we see quite a bit of those. If you think in terms of more rural areas, country roads and things, where maybe there aren't two true lanes and there's typically not a center line and most people will drive sort of down the middle of it. And we have this case all the time where two cars meet essentially head on in the middle of that roadway. They are both arguably equally at fault.
Or it can be determined by the jury in these cases that it's 50-50 when in fact we all know one party wasn't across the line, but you just really can't tell which one it was. And a jury, you know, can easily just throw their hands up and say, we don't know which one we believe. 50-50, they're both negligent. And that can be the result in a trial, too, because you really never know what's going to happen.
And it's really an antithetical result, though, because in that situation, it's not if you have truly two lanes and only one person was over the line and we just don't know which one it is. That's not a 50-50 comparative negligence situation. Somebody is 100% negligent
for sure
for being over the line. But you're absolutely right.
If you had a camera on it, you would know which one it was.
Exactly.
But if there's just no forensic evidence, there's no, you know, other evidence and the testimony kind of weighs out the same where the jury didn't know which one to believe.
Right.
The jury could come back with that verdict and say 50-50, we don't know.
Well, and so really what the jury is saying at that point, and I think this is an important point because this does come up in this context.
Mm-hmm.
The jury is not actually making a comparative negligence apportionment, even though they think that they are. Mm-hmm. And the judges will do this sometime in bench trials, too.
Yep.
But really what they're finding is that the plaintiff failed to meet their burden
Absolutely.
To prove that the defendant was more at fault.
Absolutely.
But the result is the same if you're in a modified comparative negligence jurisdiction. So modified comparative negligence jurisdictions say that if the injured party's percentage of fault is too high, then recovery will be barred.
Mm-hmm.
But if the injured party's percentage of fault is lower than the threshold, then the recovery will simply be reduced by the amount of the injured party's negligence. There are 33 states that follow a modified comparative negligence system. Some of them follow what's called the 51% rule, and some of them follow what is called the 50% rule. And those are exactly what you think that they are. The 51% rule states say that the plaintiff is barred from recovery if the plaintiff is found to be 51% liable or more.
Mm-hmm.
50% states bar recovery at 50% liable. So it's really the difference between, are we going to hold a party liable if they are equally responsible? And if you're in a 51% jurisdiction, the answer is yes. And if you're in a 50% jurisdiction, the answer is no. We're not going to hold a party responsible if the parties were equally liable. 21 states follow a 51% rule, and 12 states follow the 50% rule.
Mm-hmm.
So the 21 states that have a 51% rule, they say that the defending party must be more negligent than the injured party. So let's look at Steve, your car accident.
Mm-hmm.
If your friend's car was hanging out a foot into the roadway, out of his driveway,
mm-hmm.
I would say that you guys were equally at fault for that accident.
I would disagree with you on that one, but...
Well, because you have a responsibility to keep a lookout,
yeah.
to maintain a lookout.
And I think you would argue that I had the last clear chance to avoid the collision as well, which is true because there was no
yes.
one in his vehicle.
Yes. And okay, let's make it easier on your friend. Let's say he's hanging out a few inches into the roadway.
Yeah.
But the part of his car that you hit was only the part that was in the roadway.
Mm-hmm.
It was not in his driveway, okay?
Correct.
So, let's say that a court decides that that is 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
He is 50% liable and you are 50% liable, and he brings a lawsuit against you for hitting his car. If you are in one of the 21 jurisdictions that have a 51% rule, he would be able to recover his damages from you, but they would be reduced by 50% because the court finds that you are 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in one of the 12 states that has a 50% rule for modified comparative negligence, then he would be barred from recovering against you.
He would get nothing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So 21 states follow a 51% rule. One of those states is Michigan, and Michigan is a little special about modified comparative negligence. They do have a 51% rule, but here's what their 51% rule specifies. If the plaintiff is 51% at fault, then the court will reduce economic damages by the amount that the plaintiff was at fault, but non-economic damages are going to be barred altogether. So for the purposes of economic damages, so that's real damages, hospital bills, the repairs to the vehicle, things like that,
mm-hmm.
Michigan is essentially applying pure comparative negligence. Doesn't matter how negligent the plaintiff is, they can recover their economic damages, but it's going to be reduced by the amount that the plaintiff is negligent. But non-economic damages, this is like pain and suffering,
mm-hmm.
loss of consortium, things like that. Those damages are barred altogether over 51%. So that's where it's a modified comparative negligence rule with a 51% bar in Michigan.
So to use a different hypothetical, because there was no injury in my driveway accident, let's say you had a pedestrian crossing a street, but they're not crossing in a crosswalk, and they are struck by a vehicle who, let's say, was acting negligently anyway, speeding. So you've got negligence on both parties, and you have to determine which party was more negligent. Was it the person who's jaywalking, or was it the person who's speeding? And in Michigan, the person who has the personal injury would maybe be able to recover some of their medical bills in proportion to their fault, but they would not be able to cover pain and suffering if they are determined to be more than 50% liable.
Correct, 51% liable. So this is how we can see that determining whether or not a plaintiff will be able to recover on a loss where the liability is not clear really depends on the jurisdiction in which the lawsuit will be filed.
Mm-hmm. And These are the sorts of things that the lawyers will argue about both before the suit, and they'll be arguing about who's more at fault all the way through the suit. But ultimately, these percentages that we're talking about are determined at the end. They're determined at the trial by usually the jury, if there's a jury demand, but if there's not a jury demand, the judge will determine those percentages. And these are going to be part of the jury instructions. Basically, the jury will fill out a form and they'll say, we think that plaintiff A is 30% at fault and we think that defendant B is 70% at fault. They will give each party a certain percentage and the damages will be apportioned based on those percentages.
And it's important to remember that there's no guide for this. There's nothing that tells the jurors or tells the finder of fact, hey, in this situation, this party is this percentage at fault, this party is this percentage at fault. Mm-hmm. So like anything else, the specific outcome is going to depend on your finder of fact and how they apportion those damages.
Absolutely right.
If you'd like more information on this or any other topic, would like to suggest a future topic, or refer a file, please email us at podcast@rathbonegroup.com.
We'll also be posting additional information, including a list of the 50 states and their negligence standards, on our website, www.rathbonegroup.com.
We'd like to thank Ralph DiSilvestro for composing and performing our intro and outro music, and invite you to join us again soon on Subrogation.